All right, it's time to get started. I'm glad you are here today. It's the start of a new quarter. I know Bill Jr., and thank you, Bill, for teaching last week, but the new quarter started last week, and I was in a gospel meeting in Daytona, the church up there, and then I thought, well, it's the start of this second part of the book of Revelation, and I thought, there'll be some people who will walk into this class and be totally blind about what we're talking about. If you were here for those first 8 or 9 classes, I think you're getting sort of a grasp of it. And Carolyn told me, Dan, thank you for making it simple. And Carolyn, that's the only way I know how to make it, okay? And I think that, that's what we're trying to do. And then I thought, well, I need to take time to review. And then I walked in today and I know David was out of town. I noticed his class is not meeting. So more than half of you have no idea what the book of Revelation is about. So I had intended to review, and we're going to try to review. Now you can look on the screen and you can see this is class number 87. I think that's what's on the screen. I'm not sure what that is. That's called cut and paste and not proofreading. It's really class 8. When I went to that page, I had the word 7 in. I just typed the word 8 in, thinking it would immediately delete the 7. Let's get started. 4 things about the book of Revelation. I hope you know this as a result of thinking about what this book is all about. It is what? It's a revelation. It's a revelation to whom? To those 7 churches in Asia. And David started to name all 7 of them. David, you can go right ahead if you want to. But to those 7 churches in Asia. It's a revelation to 7 churches in Asia in signs. Now, I want you to look on the screen there. I've re-hyphenated the word signify to indicate what the Greek word says. It's the word sign. They took the word sign and made a verb out of it. And in English, you can do exactly the same thing. He sent and signified. It is symbolic. And all the way through this book, there's symbolic language. You cannot approach the book of Revelation like you approach Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, or Acts. It's not a historical book. It is a book that has symbols in it. And symbols are things that illustrate something else. They may be literal in description, but they have a spiritual meaning. When John on the Isle of Patmos saw Jesus, what did his mouth look like? You remember in chapter 1? What did his mouth look like? Had a sword coming out of his mouth. Did he literally have a sword coming out of his mouth? Absolutely. Well, what on earth? That's symbolism. And so we can't read that like, and he looked up and he saw Jesus had a sword sticking out of his mouth. No, he didn't. Yes, he did. You understand what I'm saying? It's a vision of what he saw. And that helps us, I think, understand this. And how do you decide what those signs mean? Here's what we're trying to do. We're trying to limit any interpretation of signs in the book of Revelation to the rest of the Bible. That's all they had. They did not know world history. They did not know about Russia. They did not know about, about the atomic bombs. They did not know about ICBMs. And when we get to chapter 8, I remember several years ago, somebody found the ICBMs in the book of Revelation. Nope, they didn't know anything about it. So that's not what it's about. It's a revelation to those 7 churches in Asia in signs. And the only source that they had to understand this are sources we need to use. How the Bible uses the sign, how Jesus used the signs in parables, how the word signs are maybe explained elsewhere in the New Testament, and then to have somewhat of a brief understanding of life in that first century. They didn't have to think about that. They were living it, and sometimes our absence of that, we do not understand. Revelation to 7 churches in Asia in signs of what? Things which must soon come to pass. Things must shortly happen, the old King James said. That's what this book is. And you've got to understand, you've got to absolutely understand that. Now let's look at each chapter. Chapter 1, John's on the Isle of Patmos and he sees Jesus. Why was John on the Isle of Patmos? If you say exiled, you're saying more than the Bible says, by the way. Isn't that amazing? He was and I've taught this in schools of preaching, if you put he was exiled, I count off points. The Bible doesn't say he was exiled. He was there for the word of God and the testimony of Jesus. That's why he was there. What that means, it may mean he was exiled there. But we've got to train ourselves, especially in this book, and I think in all of the books of the Bible, studies of the Bible, let's use Bible terminology. It'll help us in all of the study of the Bible. He sees Jesus on the Isle of Patmos, and Jesus tells John, what you see, write in a book and send it to the seven churches in Asia. What's in chapters 2 and 3? This is what we are studying. And Bill, thank you for what you've did. We're going to do it somewhat on Sunday night sermons also. It's letters to whom? Seven churches in Asia. Can you name those seven churches in Asia? You see, if I ask the question that way and you say no, you still make 100 on the test. I didn't ask you to name the seven churches in Asia. Can you name the seven churches? No, I cannot. And I doubt if that's on the final test to get into heaven. But it's Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamos, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea. Now, we talked about a way to remember that, ESP, TSPL. And if you weren't in the class, that doesn't mean anything to you. And so you've got those. Now then, chapter 4, here's the preamble to the book. Now we're headed into that symbolic part. And in chapter 4, before John sees anything else about all of these symbols and about things that are going to shortly come to pass, he gets to visit heaven. There's a door that's open in heaven. And in chapter 4, whom does he see? You believe in God. He sees God on the throne. God sitting on the throne has a book in his right hand that is sealed up with seven seals. Sealed up, what does that mean? It means nobody's able to understand it until that seal is opened, because only God knows the future. And we talked about that, and if you were not in those earlier classes, just go to the church's website and listen to those lessons as we dealt with that. God has a book in his hand, and nobody is able to open it. And that's when they get to chapter 5. They're trying to find somebody that's able to open up the book. What's going to happen? God, tell us what's about to happen. They didn't know. You cannot know the future. Only God knows the future. It's hidden. The power, the things that God has kept in it. Wilt thou at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? It's not given to you to know the times that God has retained within his own power. You just cannot know it. But we're about to know it because that book is about to be opened. Chapter 4, you believe in God. Chapter 5 is what? Believe also in me. Chapter 5 is the glorification of Christ. And at the end of chapter 4, they're glorifying and praising God. And at the end of chapter 5, they're glorifying Jesus. And that's important for us to get that as a preamble. Because we say this to each other. When adversity is coming our way, what do we say? Just remember, God is on the throne. And he is. And you're right about that, William. And he is. And that's what Revelation chapter 4 says. And there's the Lamb of God, and he's deity, and he has redeemed us. And that's chapter 4. Now then, when you get to chapter 6, did we get to 4 and 5? You believe in God? 4, believe also in me? 5, chapter 6. And if I say 6 real, real loud, that might help you understand what's in chapter 6. What's in chapter 6? The 6 seals are opened in chapter 6. And so these seals are opened. And so John sees this vision in heaven, and these seals began to be opened. And what you do when that first seal is open and how you identify the rider on that horse will either head you down a wrong track of trying to understand this book or head you down the right track. When that first seal is open, there is a rider on a white horse. He is given a crown. When John first sees him, he doesn't have a crown. He is then crowned, and he went out he went out conquering and to conquer. That word, conquering and to conquer, has already been used 8 times in the book of Revelation. It's not translated conquering. But here's a word that has already been used 8 times in the book of Revelation, and now it gets over here to the 9th time it's used, and for some reason the translators translates it differently. And that hurts us, but you see, if you're in those 7 churches and you don't even know that. You don't have that problem at all. But he goes out, and the way it's translated in the others is, to him that overcomes. And Bill, you talked last week about the letters to the 7 churches of Asia and the church at Ephesus especially, and that at the end of that, to him that overcometh will I give. To him that overcomes. To him that overcomes. And so here are these struggling saints, and they didn't have to, we have to be reminded they're struggling. They were living it. I mean, they were right in the midst of all kinds of situations in their life. And so they're trying to overcome. So to every one of those 7 churches in Asia, and twice to one of them, the word overcome is used. To him that overcomes, to him that overcomes, to him that overcomes. And when the first seal is open, there is a rider going out. What's he going out to do? He's going out overcoming. And if you were going to write notes in your Bible, I don't know what notes you write, but when you get to chapter 6 and you read in whatever verse that is in chapter 6, he went out overcoming and overcome. I would write in same word translated overcoming. He went out overcoming and overcome. Well, who is the rider on the white horse? Let God tell you that. And the answer is, it's Jesus. How do we know? Because when you get to the end of the book of Revelation, guess what? The rider on the white horse has a sword that comes out of his mouth by which he has overcome the nation and he is victorious. In a nutshell, that's what the book is all about. You ever read a novel and you wonder how it's going to finish? What do? Go read the last chapter. You want to understand the book of Revelation? Get to chapter 6 and read chapters 19. And somebody says, there's a lot of things I don't know about this book, but I'm telling you, this much I know, we win. That's what this book is all about. Now, in the midst of all of this is adversity and adversity and adversity. Because whenever that second seal is open, there's a red horse that goes out and a sword is given. And the word sword that is used there is a word that was to describe the sword that was used in martyrdom. Whenever you're going to behead somebody. And so there is the rider on the red horse that goes out, and there is that sword that is used for martyrdom. They understood that. They would figure it out, especially whenever speaking that language, they'd say, you know, we've got the word knife and we got the word saber and we've got different words in English to describe an implement that, with which you could cut something. But they had one word that was used every time it was used to describe martyrdom, it's this particular Greek word. He goes out overcoming and to overcome, and what happens? There's martyrdom. There's martyrdom. If you're in the 7 churches in Asia, do you get it? Do you get it? You're living it. How many of the apostles were alive whenever this book is written? There are 12 of them, and John's the only one that is alive. What's happened to them? They've killed all the saints. You cannot imagine what that would be like in the first century church. There's always, Peter's always there, and James and Paul and all of these people. And one by one, they've all been martyred. We're losing, guys. And so when the third horse comes out, what color is that horse? Black. It's black. And there it is. And we don't have a clue whether wheat is good or bad there. You know, a penny, a measure of wheat for what? A penny, and a measure of barley, or 3 measures of barley for a penny, and we don't understand if that's good or bad. That's why you got to understand from the secular world, first century world, that's real bad. That's an 800% rate of inflation, 800%, 8 times. What's a loaf of bread cost you? $3, huh? 800% good bread that'd be $24, right? But for that cheap bread, you know, that day old bread, the bread they put on special trying to get you to buy, that's what barley was. It was not a good grain at all, not nearly as good as wheat. And there's a 1,200% increase in that. And so to get the cheap bread, you get three loaves, but three loaves cost you $36 just to buy bread. Isn't that amazing? And that's where they can they identify with it? You better believe they can. That's what they were living. And it's our inability, our lack of desire to go back and live in that first century world that keeps us from understanding this book. They readily, it's a revelation of those seven churches in Asia. They got it. You know our problem? Televangelist. All of these books that have been written, you know, and when people just get out and speculate and try to make everything in that book have some symbolic meaning, and that's the wrong path to go down. And then, whenever the fourth seal is open, another horse comes out. It's not white, it's not red, it's not black. It's a pale horse, and riding on it is death. And in Dan's kindergarten mind, he's got a vacuum cleaner. I know this is not in the text, but he's going around sucking everybody up and killing them. Yep. You know, I mean that they understood that the rider on that fourth horse. And then the fifth seal is open, and you'd expect another horse. By the way, in these seven trumpets, seven bowls, and seven seals. There are three major sevens in the book. They are grouped in groups of four, two, and one. All of them are grouped in four, two, and one. We've not said that before. You would expect after four horses, you'd expect the fifth horse. Not a horse at all. It's an altar. And souls under the altar crying out, Lord, how long is it going to be? Lord, how long? We've been martyred and you've done nothing. How long will it be before you avenge our blood? Can I get you to read the last chapter? Because in chapter 17 and 18, this very phrase is used, God avenged his people. That's a Jenkins paraphrase, but I mean, in chapter 17 and 18, in her was found all the righteous blood shed on this earth. Judgment day is coming. Those souls under the altar knew it was coming. They're not going to say, are you going to do it? Just when? You know, you cannot get away with anything with God, and every transgression of disobedience receive the just recompense and reward. And man, God is not mocked. Whatever man sows, that shall he also reap. They're killing God's people, and they kill God's son. What's he going to do if somebody kills his son? The very same thing you do if somebody kills your son. Remember the parable Jesus taught? We spent a whole week studying that. Matthew 21, of those husbandmen that would not give the produce from that vineyard to the owner, and he says, I will send my son. And they said, let's kill the son, then the vineyard will be ours. And Jesus, and they did not know they were sentencing their own self, but then they perceived that he was talking about them, and Jesus said, and the application of that, the kingdom of God is going to be taken from the Jews and given to a nation that glorifies God. That's the Gentiles. And that's the world they lived in. I mean, there's just Jewish persecution, 21 persecutions in the book of Acts, and 20 of them are Jewish in origin. We make Rome the great persecutor of the church. Rome believed in freedom religion. We spent nearly a week talking about that and studying that. They didn't have to study it. They lived it. They knew it, but we've heard so much wrong information that it keeps us from understanding it. The enemy of the church in the early part of the existence of the church was not Rome. The Jews stirred up the Romans. The Jews stirred up the Romans to kill Jesus. The Jews in the synagogue stirred up the people, and the Romans persecuted Paul because of what he had done in the synagogues. All the way through the book of Acts. And these souls are saying, Lord, how much longer is it going to be? In chapter 6, we read that and we think about the end of the world. And the reason we think about the end of the world is because every time in the 21st century we've heard about stars falling out of heaven, we've thought of what the televangelists have thought. We thought of our imagination. Whenever Jesus comes back, all the stars are going to explode and everything is going to come raining down on this earth. And while that may be true, that's not the way that language is used in the Old Testament. That kind of language is used in the Old Testament to symbolize great, great adversity. When nations would fall, the sun will be dark and the moon will not give her light. said in relationship to nation after nation. I gave you a handout in relationship to that, and probably ought to resurrect that again, because we'll continue to read this in the rest of the book. But they would not think literally. And the souls, go back to the souls under the altar, and white robes, hear that word white, white robes were given unto them that says they should rest for 2,500 years. So in the year 2235, the Lord can come back when all of the signs are fulfilled. That's what televangelists are doing. They were given white robes and were told they should rest for a little season. David, you got to know what verse that is? Chapter 6, the latter part, it will rest for a little while. What verse is that? Verse 11. Just a short time. And so when the sixth seal is open, guess what? A short time is passed. And look at the closing verses in chapter 6. The great day of His wrath has come, and who shall be able to stand it? Now then, when you get to chapter 7. Chapter 7 is the chapter that is there that has the 144,000 in it. And it's important to recognize that it's in chapter 7. But if you don't read those first two verses or two or three verses in 7, you're going to miss something. Chapter 7, before we ever read about the 144,000 that are there, and the 144,000 and a great multitude are given white robes. Remember white robes back over there whenever white robes were given unto those souls under the altar? So when you get to chapter 7, the first thing that happens is ignore chapter division. The great day of His wrath is what, who shall be able to stand? And he says, and ignore chapter. And guess what I saw then? I saw the angels ready to let the winds blow that will bring the wrath of God on this earth. Folks, that's what this book is all about. It's not rocket scientists until you try to get in and try to figure out absolutely everything and get lost in all of the symbolism of it. I read the book of Revelation when I was studying. In one 3 months period of time, I read the book of Revelation through 18 times. You know why? I want to know what the book's about. I didn't want to know what anybody told me the book was about. I think it was more like 20 times. But in one 3 month period of time, I read it through 20 times. Why? That's the only way you know what's going to happen. And you read that, it just all fits together. It's like a hand in a glove. You've got a white horse. You've got a white horse win. You've got souls on the altar. You've got souls being, their blood being avenged in chapter 20. And now these souls are sitting on the throne because the rider on the white horse has overcome and has been victorious over all of the enemies that they were facing. And it's that way. But if you get so locked in trying to figure out, what kind of trees were, when the winds blew on the trees, was that a tornado? Was that a hurricane? Was that something that happened, recently? So we get all mixed up in relationship to it. You know what's happened? God is angry. He's going to let his winds blow on this earth. But they said, hang on, you cannot blow the winds until something happens. And that which must happen is, we must go through the city and place, you heard of the mark of the beast? We must go through the city and put the mark of God in the very place there is the mark of the beast. A mark on the children of God. Why? His wrath is about to come. And Abraham said to God, will not the judge of all the earth do right? Will you destroy the righteous with the wicked? Judgment is about to come. And before that happens, there is a mark of God. Figurative? Symbolic? Don't think literally. Is that your tattoo? Is that your birth date? You understand? No. It's symbolism. The mark of God that is placed there. And those angels that are about ready to pour out His wrath, we'll read this in chapter 8, they are not allowed to pour that wrath out upon those who have the mark of God. Wow, that's new. No, that's exactly in Ezekiel 9. When Nebuchadnezzar is coming against Jerusalem, guess what? Symbolically, Ezekiel sees in the book of Ezekiel, he sees Nebuchadnezzar coming, and there's Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and God comes to that city and places his mark on the righteous in that city. And when the army in Ezekiel 9 comes, it says, don't you harm the righteous. You've got to understand that has to do with the nature of God. And so we read about the mark of God and the mark of the beast, and somebody tells us, well, they're going to tattoo your social security number on your right hand and put it across your forehead, and you cannot go buy groceries down at Publix unless you pull your hair back and show them you got the mark of the beast. Folks, that's what's being read. That's what people are spending, $30 a book to get and read. Read the other book. Read the book. And so the wrath of God is poured out. First, you see, on the Jews. Why? Because as we shall continue to show, that's where the wrath started. But then there is another crowd that includes all nations. That's in chapter 7. All nations, Jews and Gentiles. And they are arrayed in white robes. They are arrayed in white robes. And he says in chapter 7, who are these that are arrayed in the white robes? Well, if I knew that, I believe I'd be able to understand the book. I believe you would too. But you're not going to understand that by letting some man come in and saying and give you some idea, about who it is. These are they, David, find what verse that is. These are they who come out of the great tribulation. What verse is that, David? Here are these 144,000. Here's this innumerable host. And who are these? They're the ones who are coming. It'd be after verse 11 to 12, right down in that section, David. 14. Who are these? These are the ones, listen, who are, present tense, who are coming out of the great tribulation. Wonder what that is. Has there been one tribulation that's greater than any other tribulation? Did not Jesus describe, pray that your flight be not in the wintertime nor on the Sabbath day, for then shall be tribulation such as was not from the beginning of time, no, nor shall ever be. That's when God's wrath came against the Jewish nation. Who are these coming out of the great tribulation? These are not in the future tense. These are not those who someday, 30 years from now, will be coming out of the tribulation. Or these are not those who 30 years past, came out of the great tribulation. These are the ones who are coming out of the great tribulation. Well, were they protected? Were the saints of God protected when the great wrath of God came, the worst tribulation ever came? When you see Jerusalem encompassed with armies, do what? Head for the hills. You flee out of it. Do not enter into the city. Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. Read about all of that, and he says, you get out of there. There's an interesting statement made in the writings of the second or third century that says not one single Christian perished in the destruction of Jerusalem. I would say it differently without thinking about some writer in the second century that might have said it. No faithful Christian should have perished. When you see that Roman army come, you get out of there. Because when that city is destroyed, will be the worst tribulation there has ever been. And he says, you get out of the city. When you see it, you get out of the city. Now then, one other time the word tribulation is used, the tribulation is used in the book of Revelation, is back in Revelation chapter 1. Chapter 1, verse 9. John says, I am your brother in the kingdom. I am your brother in the kingdom. We have used that verse so many times to talk about the church is the kingdom. Why? Because the kingdom was established in the first century. Why? Because John says, I am your brother in the kingdom. Ever heard that argument made? It's a great, great argument. Not I will be your brother in a future kingdom. I am your brother in the kingdom. And so what happens? We make a valid argument. But Revelation chapter 1, verse 9 not only says, I am your brother in the kingdom, I am your brother in the tribulation. The word the is there. It's not in the King James. New King James has it there because it's in the Greek. I am your brother in the tribulation. It was happening when this book was being written. I am your brother, and these souls are coming out of the great tribulation. Now, in the class, and we're not going to go look at all of this, we pointed out that the Jehovah's Witness view of the 144,000 is as wrong as it can be, because you cannot take the 144,000 literally without taking 12,000 from every tribe and without making them all men. There are no women in heaven, because they're all men. There are no men in heaven, right? They're all virgins, so there are no men in heaven. I'm going to prove to you there are no women in heaven in just a minute, but no preachers in heaven. There's one verse in here that says there are no women in heaven and no preachers in heaven. I'll show you that one in just a few minutes. And so you take it literal. They're all women, and they're unmarried, and they're virgins and everything, and it's remarkable. And we looked at all of that information. I don't want to do that. That is a 30-minute catch-up view. All right. I want us to get to chapter 8. When you get to chapter 8, if you go to the slide, it says chapter 8, the four trumpets. In chapter 8, we've got these 144,000, and they've come out, and great things are happening. Now, what happened at the close of start of chapter 7? Hold up! Don't let the winds blow. Ignore chapter divisions, folks. Don't just say, well, I read that chapter, now I think a week from now I'll read the next chapter. You won't get it that way. And one of the great things I did was reading the book of Revelation through 20 times, just day after day after week, day after day, trying to figure out what this book's about. It's not that hard. Don't let the winds blow, because they are those who are going to be redeemed out of the tribulation. Now then, come on, winds, let us have it. And so when he got to chapter 8, when he opened the seventh seal, we've talked about the sixth seal in chapter 6. When the seventh seal is open, there was silence in heaven for half an hour. And somebody said, obviously, I would not think this shows there are no women there, because a woman cannot be silent for 30 minutes. And somebody, when I said that, said, what about preachers? So I don't make that point. I don't make that point anymore. Just all of a sudden, when there's silence, what's the purpose of silence? Did I get your attention? I mean, horses running all over heaven, man. I mean, there are souls under the altar. There are stars falling out of heaven like the fig tree. And all of a sudden, the seventh seal is open. And what do you see? I saw seven angels stand before God, and they were given seven trumpets. And another angel, having a golden censer, came and stood at the altar. And he was given much incense that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar, which was before the throne. You got a picture of that? What's happening? Well, back in chapter 4, you believe in God, believe also in me, chapter 5, there's incense being burned there. What's that? It's the prayers of the saints. Yes. What's what?
A censer
is in Judaism, in the tabernacle, you get ready to burn incense, you took a little funnel-shaped device, you know, an ornate, beautiful, made of gold and everything, made of brass in biblical times, and you would put the coals from the altar that was outside where they offer the animal sacrifices. And then you would take the incense and put that, and you would carry it into the holy place. And the aroma of that incense went up in the tabernacle over, perhaps over behind the curtain, and went into the holy place. Remember Nadab and Abihu, who offered strange fire? What'd they do? They did not get the fire from the altar. And so he sees this angel that has a golden censer, and he stood by the altar, and I wonder if this is the same altar that might have souls underneath it. Because the souls underneath it are praying, and I'm telling you, those saints in those seven churches in Asia, I know what they were been praying. How long, O Lord? How much longer are you going to have to suffer this way? Have you felt that every time you had sickness and physical pain and adversity in your life? I've had all I can take. And they're crying out, how long? And so these prayers are mixed, and they go up into the very presence of God, and the smoke of their incense, verse 4, with the prayers of the saints ascended before God from the angel's hand. Then the angel takes the censer, he fills it with fire from the altar and throws it to the earth. And there was noise and thundering and lightning and an earthquake. Got a picture? Yep. Well, John, what's this all about? So, the next verse says, the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. You go back to chapter 7. In chapter 7, whenever they were told, do not blow. See if I can find chapter 7. The four corners of the earth holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, on the sea, or on any tree. Look at this. On the earth, on the sea, nor on any tree. Look what's about to happen. Now, as these trumpets sound, the judgment of God comes on the earth, on the seas, and on the trees. That's exactly what's going to happen. There's a continuity about all of these things that are going to happen. Why? God's angry. Yeah, absolutely. Why is He angry? Because they're killing His saints. And the saints have been crying out since the death of Stephen. Crying out, Lord, help us, God, help us, God. And 40 years have passed and it's still happening. The entirety of a life of a Christian. You're 20 years of age, you're now 70 years of age, or 60 years of age, and the church has been praying this, you know, for 40 years. God help us, God deliver us. And it's about to happen. And that's what the book of Revelation says. It is of things which must shortly happen. And so when that first trumpet sounds, to get back to chapter 8, the first angel blows the trumpet. So now we got seven seals, and now we got seven trumpets. And when that first trumpet sounds, hail and fire followed, mingled with blood, and they were thrown to the earth. And a third of the trees were burned up and the green grass was burned up. God's angry. And God had promised that Jewish nation, when I get angry with you, I'm going to impact your life. Days of Ahab and Jezebel, what happened? Elijah thought he was the only righteous person on the earth. Elijah prays and there's a drought and the accompanying famine that comes with that. We don't have time to read the Old Testament, but it's all the way through the Old Testament. When you study the prophets and the minor prophets, that's what you're going to see. You disobey God, the armies are going to come against you. And so the wrath of God is manifested in physical judgments. If I say the word pestilence, could that be sort of a generic word? You know what Jesus said would precede the destruction of that temple in Jerusalem? Wars and rumors of wars, famines and earthquakes and pestilences. It is happening. And so that first angel sounds, and there is that comes down to the earth. It is interesting, and I call attention to it because it is significant. Only 1/3 of the trees are destroyed. A little bit later in this book, we're going to see not the blowing of trumpets. We're going to see bowls of the wrath of God poured out on this earth. And when this first trumpet sounds, the wrath of God is poured out on 1/3 of the trees. And later in the book, when it's poured out on the earth, all of the trees are impacted. Let's talk about, before we get too close to the application, let's talk about it. When the second angel sounds, John sees a great mountain burning with fire that's thrown into the sea, and 1/3 of the sea became blood. And that's what's in chapter 7, verse 1. The wind's going to blow on the seas. Don't let the winds blow on the sea. The winds are blowing. And this time, it's not the picture of winds bring it. It's a picture of a mountain. You want to say a meteor? You use your own imagination. We've got a whole lot better technical terms to describe a mountain that falls into the sea. But that's what he sees. And 1/3 of the sea becomes blood, and 1/3 of the living creatures in the sea, and 1/3 of the ship are destroyed. Guess what happens when the bowls are poured out? Not 1/3. All of it. And so the third angel sounds, and a great star falls from heaven, burning like a torch, and it fell on 1/3 of the rivers and on the springs of water. The sea's the salt water. How dependent are you in the midst of adversity? You know, when there's a drought, when a hurricane comes and you're trying to find water, you got an ocean full of it out here. No, you can't have that. You know the first thing people want when there's a hurricane? You know what they wanted in the Bahamas? You know what you wanted? You know what you wanted when the hurricane came through? And so God's judgment is, I'm going to dry up the waters. I'm so angry for what you've done. I'm going to manifest this. And we're going to talk about this next week, about the application of it. But I want us to get the picture of what's happening. Remember on Final Test, School of Preaching, I'm not asking for the interpretation. I just want you to tell me what happens when the third angel sounds. And by the way, and he says, and the name of that star is bitterness. The name of that star is wormwood. I'm not what you would put in water that make it taste bitter, but when they put wormwood in the water, it became bitter. And wormwood hits on this earth, and all of the water is wormwood. You ever had been to a place where it had sulfur water? You remember, you know, that's almost in Florida until you get all that filtration thing. Preacher from New Zealand came to church I was preaching at in Tennessee, and right in the middle of his sermon, he said, guys, I've just got to stop my sermon. Go get a drink of water. He stopped his sermon. It was Peter Mary, and he ran out to the water fountain, and guess what kind of water they had there? Sulfur water. I mean, he took that sulfur water, and they said he spewed it all over the foyer, and then he came back and preached, you know. I mean, that's what happens, and that's what happened. And wormwood comes, and the fourth angel sounds. The fourth angel sounds, and the sun was darkened, 1/3 of the moon, 1/3 of the stars, and for 1/3 of the day, the sun and the moon and the stars are impacted. Can it get any worse? Look at verse 13. I saw an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth because of the remaining blast of the trumpet of the three angels who are about to sound." ignore chapter division, and the fifth angel sounds. And we'll start here next week, and the bottomless pit opens up. You know the other word for the bottomless pit? The abyss. And out of all the things that we think of in relationship to demonic things and the bottomless pit, coming out of the bottomless pit is an army that looks like locusts. Could I get you to read Joel chapter 1 and chapter 2 between now and next week? You will really begin to understand what this is all about if you'll read the book of Joel. Guess what the seven churches in Asia had access to? Joel chapter 1 and chapter 2. We have access to, we just don't go to it. And so if you'll read Joel 1 and 2 between now and next week. Thank you very much. I'm sorry to have to go so fast, but I felt like we needed to do the review before we headed into some new stuff.